Fifth case this morning, Buchanan Moore v. County of Milwaukee.
May it please the court and good morning. I am Michael Watton. I represent the appellants in this matter. This is the underlying case, a 1983 action, and what we're here to determine is the...
Let me put you at ease. We've read the briefs, we've read the record, and we're fairly thoroughly familiar with the factual predicate.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me just jump into where I think the briefs might be slightly unclear and where this oral argument can help. This all turns on an act. Do we have an act of the government or do we not have an act? And I think this court in November had the Sandage versus Vandenberg County case, which kind of brings together all of the background cases in 1983. Gray is an agent who eventually kills Moore. Where is the act? When Gray enters the county custody he enters county custody July 17th. Between July 17th and July 21, the county denies Gray necessary medication which the county previously prescribed. The county knows that Gray needs antipsychotic medication so that he is not a non-volitional, violent, assaultive person. The county has complete control of Gray because he's in the jail. When they deny him this medication, so he enters the jail as a volitional actor, maybe not a nice guy, he's going to jail. He actually broke in on June 21 and another break-in. His modus operandi when he's volitional is he goes into people's houses, and if they're there, when they confront him, he runs away. That's his actions when he's volitional. However, in the jail stay between July 17th and the 21st, he has no access. He's under complete custody of the county. He has no access to these antipsychotic medications. Because of that, and the drop in his system that's created by the government, when he leaves custody within 24 hours and walking distance, he kills Moore.
Why isn't the county's action just negligence?
The county's action goes beyond negligence because the county has complete control of Gray. He can't just go to the restroom and take his medication.
Right, so
the county has an obligation when they have somebody in their control to not deny them the medication.
Right, and if they forget to do it or fail to do it for whatever reason, forgetfulness or otherwise, why isn't that just an act of negligence as opposed to an actionable Section 1983 claim?
Well, because what choice? When they have custody of Gray, what choice does Gray have? He can't get to the medication. The issue that makes this the 1983 claim is really two activities or two parts of an action. Action one is creating the madman. And I know that, and I'll talk a minute about that famous quote, I think, of Judge Posner about the madman. But if you create the madman and then you launch him on society, well, there it is. There's your two acts. We know release alone, if the person was mad when he comes into the system, release alone doesn't get us to a constitutional violation for the eventual party that's killed. But when you have the combination of the creation of the harm, we have to have that act that changes things. So here's the point. If there was no intervening government action, meaning if this person, Gray, was out on the street between the 17th and the 21st, he has access and he can take his medication. Moore may face Gray on the 22nd of July, but Moore will not face an actor who's non-volitional and violent. Moore will face an actor who may break into his neighbor's house, but on sight, which is what Gray has always done, he's going to run away. When Gray is now denied the medication between the 17th and the 21st, he's a non-volitional killer. Well, the government, what you're asking, I believe, Judge Sykes, about Where on the scale of tort liability is this? They right, know. They prescribe the medication.
Let me ask you this way. Are there allegations that he was actively psychotic in the jail?
Are there allegations? I think that's an inference. I think we need to discover that. Remember, we're pre-discovery here. Okay. The inference in the complaint is, yes, he's not psychotic when he walks into that jail. And I think that's supported.
Do we look at your allegations as we would if this were a motion to dismiss?
Yes, I believe we do. I think we have this motion for judgment on the pleadings, and I believe there's case law that we look at this as if this is a motion to dismiss. So the real problem is, and I think, am I into? I'm into
rebuttal time. You can either use it or not.
So I'll hold it for rebuttal, but then I'll readdress that issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Knott. Let me ask you the same question that I just asked your opponent. Are we looking at this as we would a motion to dismiss with regard to facts, with inferences to facts as stated in what?
Correct, Your Honor. This is a motion for judgment on the pleadings, which under the case law is considered the same as a motion for motion to dismiss.
Part of your brief shows that they didn't allege certain things. How does that work?
Your Honor, I think that the plaintiff's case has expanded as the proceedings have gone along, and I was trying to focus the court back on the allegations in the complaint, which were the allegations that, of course, Judge Clevert had an opportunity to examine. I feel that I think it's appropriate argument to say that some of the allegations in the briefs go beyond the allegations of the complaint and are not a fair inference. For instance, Judge Sykes asked whether there were allegations that he was psychotic in the jail after the July 17 arrest, the final arrest prior to his leaving. There absolutely are not any such inferences. And if I may...
The problem is we've got to go to the inferences, not the allegations.
That's right, Your Honor. And
this, you don't think this would have been appropriate to a more definite statement? File one.
Your Honor, that may have been an appropriate measure. I think it would have led us right back here to where we are. I think that ultimately this court has faced numerous cases of failure to protect where it's alleged that the law enforcement officials did not do enough to take these madmen or psychologically challenged people off the streets and therefore resulting in crime. It's been tried and that argument has been probed many ways, almost always with failure. I don't think that there's a circumstance like this where it has where the court has affirmed a DeShaney claim. So I think if the facts were explored further with a motion to dismiss, I think we'd still have the act of a person with a criminal propensity who had engaged in many criminal acts over time, who was released by the county officials because there was no basis to keep them. Ultimately, after the July 17 arrest, there was no charge coming. And Mr. Watton has very clearly pled what happened after that July 17 arrest. There was a lack of communication between the DA's office, which is a state office in the state of Wisconsin, and the city police, which led to the non-issuance of a criminal complaint. The county officials are holding this gentleman, Mr. Gray, in their jail with no charges. They have no capacity to keep him there. What Mr. Watton has argued, and he's trying to address the affirmative act requirement of the King decision. He's alleged that this act of holding somehow became an affirmative act that made Mr. Gray a volitional weapon, a non-volitional weapon, someone who could not stop his capacity to kill. He's also alleged here in the courtroom for the first time that Mr. Gray on other occasions would simply turn and run and that he would become that he became homicidal during this stay in the prison. That fact as well is not in the complaint. The court has faced the affirmative acts whether the court has faced the question of whether the government creates a criminal by failing to intervene to stop and more aggressively prosecute him. The court has stated that the presence of an affirmative act requires some change, some act of authority by the government that changes the status quo. We know from the allegations in the complaint what the status quo was in this case. Mr. Gray was a criminal. He had engaged in criminal acts on July 17. The act of holding him in the jail did not increase that propensity to crime. We all know, and that gets into the question of proximate cause, we all know the uncertainty with which psychotropic medications can change criminal behavior. It's in no sense anything like a foreseeable event that someone, if not medicated, will engage in an act as heinous as this, which is a homicide.
Well, if he was actively psychotic and the county knew of his history and yet released him as opposed to converting him to a civil commitment, that's why I asked the question about whether he was actively psychotic in the jail or at the moment of his release, because then you might conceivably construct some sort of an argument about state-created danger and foreseeability, et cetera. I don't know how far you'd get, but I don't know if you're saying that that wasn't in the complaint.
I am saying that that was not in the complaint, Your Honor. Okay. The complaint is that with respect to the July 17 arrest and the release, the complaint actually alleges that the county should have known because of a mental health involuntary commitment 30 days prior that he had some propensity for mental illness. I think the propensity fairly read would be towards low-level criminal acts like unlawful entry or this loitering, which he had claimed against him several times.
Swinging a golf club at somebody. That's a little more than...
You're correct, Your Honor.
Breaking an entry.
You're correct, Your Honor. Under the authorities of the case, it is a...
this was pretty appalling.
I'm certainly not minimizing that. Mm-hmm. But given the case law, it's fair to look at what he had been accused of previously. And the transition from his prior accusations to acquiring a gun and utilizing it in one of these entries is something that I don't think is foreseeable by the jail authorities. Moreover, I return to the point that Mr. Watton is assuming that there is some change in the status quo in the negative, that by holding him he became more dangerous. Under the court's authorities, including the Sandage case, which was the most recent court decision on the DeShaney state-created danger, the state does not increase the danger of a criminal by failing to prosecute aggressively. There are several gaps in the complaint, all of which lead to the conclusion that plaintiff does not meet the plausible right to relief as required by Twombly. Specifically, and Your Honor pointed this out immediately, that there are not facts supporting a basis to detain Mr. Gray after the July 17 arrest. I think Mr. Watton is implying a constitutional duty on the part of the county to detain Mr. Gray on the suspicion that he has some criminal propensity, or that he would decompose upon release and become more violent and more criminal.
Well, the civil commitment standard is a lot higher than that.
The civil commitment standard, as I understand it, is some propensity to harm.
Imminent.
Correct.
Danger,
correct, Your Honor.
To self or others.
Correct, Your Honor. The argument there is also undercut within the complaint itself by the allegation of the events the previous month. On June 13, he was arrested and the involuntary commitment proceeding was started. The allegations in the complaint is that he was appropriately medicated, and he was medicated when he was released on June 20. The very next day, Mr. Gray engaged in an act for which he was arrested, and that was a criminal entry. So we have, within the complaint itself, an argument that undermines the allegation that Mr. Gray could be medicated and could be kept from committing criminal acts. The complaint also fails to allege the elements required under the proximate cause standard of the King test.
Yeah, but I get back to this business of being similar to a motion to dismiss, where you can if you can think about it, it can't be speculative according to the cases. But if you can at least draw that broad inference from anything in the complaint.
I agree, Your Honor. It is a difficult standard for us to uphold. Mr. Watton may discover facts that could supplement his argument if discovery were allowed. I think we would return to the circumstance we have, which is a gentleman who had shown a long propensity for criminal activity, who increased his propensity on this, or increased the nature of his acts on this particular case. I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. May it please the Court. The reason this is not negligence is because we believe it's a policy of the county, and that policy forces these actions of deliberate indifference to the needs and the needs of the person in the jail.
What in the complaint suggests the existence of such a policy or custom in Milwaukee?
I think on a number of times we have put into the complaint, and I don't have it in front of me, Your Honor, that the county knew he needed the medication because the county doctors prescribed that medication less than a month ago. So I think we have overlap.
You've alleged the existence of a policy to withhold prescribed medications?
Well, Your Honor, at this point, I'm not saying withhold, but perhaps be arbitrary or not to find out. When a person comes into the prison system, they should, I believe they do, or they are required. I think there is a duty on the government to check what kind of medical needs they have. So if you were to enter into the prison system and need a heart medication, you're going to get that heart medication while you're waiting in the jail those 4 days.
That's assuming you tell them you're required, that you need the heart medication.
Well, I think that raises a very good question of fact and something we would want to discover. What was that interview?
What would you say? What you meant? Do you need medication for your insanity, or do you need medication because you're violent?
Well, that's a good question. I think that also goes.
And do you reply? I mean, you wind up resting on whatever answer you get.
Well, perhaps not. Perhaps greater than that. Perhaps the government knows that it has a number of psychopaths who are violent in the prison system because it knows about Chapter 51, which is also part of the county and the mental health complex. So why wouldn't there be intercommunication?
Would that be a statistically available matter for you? Could you just go check and find out how many people are run through the penitentiary or through the jail system that are psychotic?
Can you do that without discovery?
Can you just walk in and say, do you have a record of these things?
Can I walk into the
anybody walk into a
and make a public records request?
How could you tell me? Could a newspaper reporter call up the police department and say how many people come into your institution that are wacky or are?
Well, I think you run into intergovernment. You don't run into things like HIPAA and medical. But
I'm asking you, could you inquire the way I've described it and get an answer that will tell you what you want to know?
I wouldn't know if the government would answer the question. Surely in discovery the government would answer the question, but I don't know outside whether the government would answer that question.
They might very well, you know, if somebody asked them.
They might not.
But perhaps they're
not even looking at this clear record that they have. Perhaps they don't compile the statistics, but it's right in front of them. That would be deliberate indifference. In any event, I would ask the court to look at the time frame. June 13th, he's waving the golf club, right? So, and they determine he's psychotic, but they keep him for 7 days.
It's always been my feeling that anybody with a golf club is clearly psychotic.
But then his next two charges, which aren't fully in the complaint, but they are things that the county knows, all the charges. He does enter people's houses, but when confronted, he runs. That's what he does when he becomes non-volitional. So I believe that he was volitional when he enters the jail on the 17th, because just before that, when confronted, he ran. You know, this is a return to his psychosis, but a madman isn't a madman for all occasions because he's treated. So the government changed the nature of, if I can just finish the last sentence, Your Honor. The government changed his nature between the 17th and the 21st. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. And we